Chapter 21. A Computer for Calculating the End of the World. The Maya knew where their advanced learning originated. It was handed down to them, they said, from the first men, the creatures of Quetzalcoatl, whose names had been Balamkitze, Jaguar with the Sweet Smile, Balamakab, Jaguar of the Night, Mahukuta, the Distinguished Name, and Ikibalam, Jaguar of the Moon. According to the Popol Vuh, these forefathers were endowed with intelligence. They saw, and instantly they could see far. They succeeded in seeing, they succeeded in knowing, all that there is in the world. The things hidden in the distance they saw without first having to move. Great was their wisdom. Their sight reached to the forests, the rocks, the lakes, the seas, the mountains, and the valleys. In truth, they were admirable men. They were able to know all, and they examined the four corners, the four points of the arch of the sky, and the round face of the earth. The achievements of this race aroused the envy of several of the most powerful deities. It is not well that our creatures should know all, opined these gods. Must they perchance be the equals of ourselves, their makers, who can see afar, who know all and see all? Must they also be gods? Obviously, such a state of affairs could not be allowed to continue. After some deliberation, an order was given and appropriate action was taken. Let their sight reach only to that which is near. Let them see only a little of the face of the earth. Then the heart of heaven blew mist into their eyes, which clouded their sight, as when a mirror is breathed upon. Their eyes were covered, and they could only see what was close, only that was clear to them. In this way, the wisdom and all the knowledge of the first men were destroyed. Anyone familiar with the Old Testament will remember that the reason for the expulsion of Adam and Eve from the Garden of Eden had to do with similar divine concerns. After the first men had eaten of the fruit of the tree of knowledge and good and evil, the Lord God said, "Behold, the man has become as one of us, to know good and evil. Now, lest he put forth his hand, and take also of the tree of life, and eat and live for ever. Let us send him forth from the Garden of Eden." The Popol Vuh is accepted by scholars as a great reservoir of uncontaminated pre-Columbian tradition. It is therefore puzzling to find such similarities between these traditions and those recorded in the Genesis story. Moreover, like so many of the other Old World, New World links we have identified, the character of the similarities is not suggestive of any kind of direct influence of one region on the other, but of two different interpretations of the same set of events. Thus, for example, the biblical Garden of Eden looks like a metaphor for the state of blissful, almost godlike knowledge that the first men of the Popol Vuh enjoyed. The essence of this knowledge was the ability to see all and to know all. Was this not precisely the ability Adam and Eve acquired after eating the forbidden fruit which grew on the branches of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil? Finally, just as Adam and Eve were driven out of the garden, so were the four first men of the Popol Vuh deprived of their ability to see far. Thereafter, their eyes were covered, and they could only see what was close. Both the Popol Vuh and Genesis therefore tell the story of mankind's fall from grace. In both cases, this state of grace was closely associated with knowledge, and the reader is left in no doubt that the knowledge in question was so remarkable that it conferred godlike powers on those who possessed it. The Bible, adopting a dark and muttering tone of voice, calls it the knowledge of good and evil and has nothing further to add. The Popol Vuh is much more informative. It tells us that the knowledge of the first men consisted of the ability to see things hidden in the distance, that they were astronomers who examined the four corners, the four points of the arch of the sky, and that they were geographers who succeeded in measuring the round face of the earth. Geography is about maps. In part one, we saw evidence suggesting that the cartographers of an as yet unidentified civilization might have mapped the planet with great thoroughness at an early date. Could the Popol Vuh be transmitting some garbled memory of that same civilization when it speaks nostalgically of the first men and of the miraculous geographical knowledge they possessed. Geography is about maps, and astronomy is about stars. Very often, the two disciplines go hand in hand, because stars are essential for navigation on long seagoing voyages of discovery, and long seagoing voyages of discovery are essential for the production of accurate maps. Is it accidental that the first men of the Popol Vuh were remembered not only for studying the round face of the Earth, but for their contemplation of the arch of heaven? And is it a coincidence that the outstanding achievement of Mayan society was its observational astronomy, upon which, through the medium of advanced mathematical calculations, was based a clever, complex, sophisticated, and very accurate calendar? Knowledge out of place. In 1954, J. Eric Thompson, a leading authority on the archaeology of Central America, confessed to a deep sense of puzzlement at a number of glaring disparities he had identified between the generally unremarkable achievements of the Mayas as a whole and the advanced state of their astrocalendrical knowledge. What mental quirks, he asked, led the Maya intelligentsia to chart the heavens, yet fail to grasp the principle of the wheel, to visualize eternity, as no other semi-civilized people has ever done, yet ignore the short step from corbel to true arch, to count in millions, yet never to learn to weigh a sack of corn? Perhaps the answer to these questions is much simpler than Thompson realized. Perhaps the astronomy, the deep understanding of time, and the long-term mathematical calculations were not quirks at all. Perhaps they were the constituent parts of a coherent but very specific body of knowledge that the Maya had inherited more or less intact from an older and wiser civilization. Such an inheritance would explain the contradictions observed by Thompson, and there is no need for any dispute on this point. We already know that the Maya received their calendar as a legacy from the Olmecs. 1,000 years earlier, the Olmecs were using exactly the same system. The real question should be, where did the Olmecs get it? What kind of level of technological and scientific development was required for a civilization to devise a calendar as good as this? Take the case of the solar year. In modern Western society, we still make use of a solar calendar, which was introduced in Europe in 1582 and is based on the best scientific knowledge then available, the famous Gregorian calendar. The Julian calendar, which it replaced, computed the period of the Earth's orbit around the Sun at 365.25 days. Pope Gregory XIII's reform substituted a finer and more accurate calculation, 365.2425 days. Thanks to scientific advances since 1582, we now know that the exact length of the solar year is 365.2422 days. The Gregorian calendar therefore incorporates a very small plus error, just 0.0003 of a day, pretty impressive accuracy for the 16th century. Strangely enough, though its origins are wrapped in the mists of antiquity far deeper than the 16th century, the Mayan calendar achieved even greater accuracy. It calculated the solar year at 365.2420 days, a minus error of only 0.0002 of a day. Similarly, the Maya knew the time taken by the moon to orbit the Earth. Their estimate of this period was 29.528395 days, extremely close to the true figure of 29.530588 days computed by the finest modern methods. The Mayan priests also had in their possession very accurate tables for the prediction of lunar and solar eclipses, and were aware that these could occur only within plus or minus 18 days of the node, when the moon's path crosses the apparent path of the sun. Finally, the Maya were remarkably accomplished mathematicians. They possessed an advanced technique of metrical calculation by means of a checkerboard device we ourselves have only discovered or rediscovered in the last century. They also understood perfectly and used the abstract concept of zero and were acquainted with place numerations. These are esoteric fields. As Thompson observed, the cipher, naught, and place numerations are so much parts of our cultural heritage and seem such obvious conveniences that it is difficult to comprehend how their invention could have been long delayed. Yet neither ancient Greece, with its great mathematicians, nor ancient Rome, had any inkling of either naught or place numeration. To write 1848 in Roman numerals requires 11 letters. M, D, C, 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 X, L, V, I, I. Yet the Maya had a system of place value notation, very much like our own, at a time when the Romans were still using their clumsy method. Isn't it a bit odd that this otherwise unremarkable Central American tribe should at such an early date have stumbled upon an innovation which Otto Neugebauer, the historian of science, has described as one of the most fertile inventions of humanity? Someone else's science? Let us now consider the question of Venus, a planet that was of immense symbolic importance to all the ancient peoples of Central America who identified it strongly with Quetzalcoatl, or Gucumatz, or Kukulcan, as the plumed serpent was known in the Maya dialects. Unlike the ancient Greeks, but like the ancient Egyptians, the Maya understood that Venus was both the morning star and the evening star. They understood other things about it as well. The synodical revolution of a planet is the period of time it takes to return to any given point in the sky, as viewed from Earth. Venus revolves around the Sun every 224.7 days, while the Earth follows its own slightly wider orbit. The composite result of these two motions is that Venus rises in exactly the same place in the Earth's sky, approximately every 584 days. Whoever invented the sophisticated calendrical system inherited by the Maya had been aware of this and had found ingenious ways to integrate it with other interlocking cycles. Moreover, it is clear from the mathematics which brought these cycles together that the ancient calendar masters had understood that 584 days was only an approximation and that the movements of Venus are by no means regular. They had therefore worked out the exact figure established by today's science for the average synodical revolution of Venus over very long periods of time. That figure is 583.92 days, and it was knitted into the fabric of the Mayan calendar in numerous intricate and complex ways. For example, to reconcile it with the so-called sacred year, the Tzolk'in of 260 days, which was divided into 13 months of 20 days each, the calendar called for a correction of 4 days to be made every 61 Venus years. In addition, during every fifth cycle, a correction of 8 days was made at the end of the 57th revolution. Once these steps were taken, the Tzolk'in and the synodical revolution of Venus were intermeshed so tightly that the degree of error to which the equation was subject was staggeringly small, 1 day in 6,000 years. And what made this all the more remarkable was that a further series of precisely calculated adjustments kept the Venus cycle and the Tzolk'in not only in harmony with each other, but in exact relationship with the solar year. Again, this was achieved in a manner which ensured that the calendar was capable of doing its job virtually error-free over vast expanses of time. Why did the semi-civilized Maya need this kind of high-tech precision? Or did they inherit in good working order a calendar engineered to fit the needs of a much earlier and far more advanced civilization? Consider the crowning jewel of Maya calendrics, the so-called long count. This system of calculating dates also expressed beliefs about the past, notably the widely held belief that time operated in great cycles, which witnessed recurrent creations and destructions of the world. According to the Maya, the current great cycle began in darkness on Forahau 8 Kumku, a date corresponding to 13 August 3114 BC in our own calendar. As we've seen, it was also believed that the cycle would end amid global destruction in the epoch of AD 2012 in our calendar. The function of the long count was to record the elapse of time since the beginning of the current great cycle, literally to count off, one by one, the years remaining to our present creation. The long count is perhaps best envisaged as a sort of celestial adding machine, constantly calculating and recalculating the scale of our growing debt to the universe. So at any rate, thought the Maya. Calculations on the long count computer were not, of course, done in numbers. The Maya used their own notation, which they had derived from the Olmecs, who had derived it from nobody knows. This notation was a combination of dots, signifying ones, or units, or multiples of 20, bars, signifying fives, or multiples of 5 times 20, and a shell glyph, signifying zero. Spans of time were counted by days, kin, periods of 20 days, uinal, computing years of 360 days, tun, periods of 20 tuns, known as katun, and periods of 20 katuns, known as baktun. There were also 8,000 tun periods, piktun, and 160,000 tun periods, kalaptun, to mop up even larger calculations. All this should make clear that although the Maya believed themselves to be living in one great cycle that would surely come to a violent end, they also knew that time was infinite, and that it proceeded with its mysterious revolutions regardless of individual lives or civilizations. As Thompson summed up in his great study on the subject, in the Maya scheme, the road over which time had marched stretched into a past so distant that the mind of man cannot comprehend its remoteness. Yet the Maya undauntedly retrod that road, seeking its starting point. A fresh view, leading further backward, unfolded at every stage. The mellowed centuries blended into millennia, and they into tens of thousands of years, as those tireless inquirers explored deeper and still deeper into the eternity of the past. On a stela at Quiriga in Guatemala, a date over 90 million years ago is computed. On another, a date over 300 million years before that is given. These are actual computations, stating correctly day and month positions, and are comparable to calculations in our calendar, giving the month positions on which Easter would have fallen at equivalent distances in the past. The brain reels at such astronomical figures. Isn't this all a bit avant-garde for a civilization that didn't otherwise distinguish itself in many ways? It's true that Mayan architecture was good within its limits, but there was precious little else that these jungle-dwelling Indians did, which suggested they might have had the capacity or the need to conceive of really long periods of time. It's been a good deal less than 2 centuries since the majority of Western intellectuals abandoned Bishop Usher's opinion that the world was created in 4004 BC and accepted that it must be infinitely older than that. In plain English, this means that the ancient Maya had a far more accurate understanding of the true immensity of geological time and of the vast antiquity of our planet than did anyone in Britain, Europe, or North America until Darwin propounded the theory of evolution. So how come the Maya got handy with big periods like hundreds of millions of years? Was it a freak cultural development, or did they inherit the calendrical and mathematical tools which facilitated and enabled them to develop this sophisticated understanding? If an inheritance was involved, it's legitimate to ask what the original inventors of the Mayan calendar's computer-like circuitry had intended it to do. What had they designed it for? Had they simply conceived of all its complexities to concoct a challenge to the intellect, a sort of tremendous anagram, as one authority claimed, or could they have had a more pragmatic and important objective in mind? We've seen that the obsessive concern of Mayan society, and indeed of all the ancient cultures of Central America, was with calculating, and if possible, postponing, the end of the world. Could this be the purpose the mysterious calendar was designed to fulfill? Could it have been a mechanism for predicting some terrible cosmic or geological catastrophe?